What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Outside Interference with me, the RRBG, and the daddy man himself, the inappropriate one, Earl Skakel. How are you, brother?
Trying to make it, man. It's a never-ending battle.
Never-ending battle. Well, the battle sometimes ends, as it ended recently, which is why we're here for Mr. Sting, the Stinger. It's Sting! He's finally retired, or is he? We'll see.
I think he is.
You think so after that send-off?
He strikes me as the type, but he saved his money. He doesn't. He's 64, man. Like,
yeah, that's true. But I mean, Ric Flair's still out there.
Yeah, but I don't think Flair saved his money. I mean, you know, four or five divorces. You know, pretty much a lifelong drinker and other things. You know, I don't think Sting has the financial responsibilities Rick does.
True. I mean, Rick is diversifying his portfolio with all this bullshit he's putting out between energy drinks and chicken wings and fucking weed stuff. Like, it's a
dick pills.
Does he have dick pills?
Yeah, he's doing some, at least he was maybe about a year ago, something like, hey, if you want to take a girl to Space Mountain, we all need help on the way up or something. I forget what the name of it is, but
is it Woo Pills? I mean, Jesus.
It was something like Heaven. I don't know. It was some weird name, but it was just kind of sad. It's like,
That's weird.
He needs money.
That's weird. Well, we'll get to the Sting retirement. I want to run down Revolution with you. Did you watch the whole pay-per-view?
I watched it from... I almost went to it. I was... Saturday night, I saw there was a 6 a.m. flight on American Airlines that would have gotten me into Charlotte. You had to fly into Charlotte. And it was just too much money. I really wanted to go. But I watched, you know, from the first match on Zero Hour to... You know, Sting saying goodbye.
Nice, nice. And I saw you actually dressed up like Sting for your spot at the store.
I did the night before because nice. I really thought I was going to go to the airport. I said, I'll just wear this, go straight to the airport. I had a lot of people, you know, like the crowd was yelling, Sting. And it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's start at the very beginning then. You know, the kickoff show, obviously, Rene Paquette and our homie RJ City killing it as usual. But the first match was the Bang Bang Scissor Gang, which is a kind of a new development that I wanted to talk to you about, see how you're feeling about it. But they went on to beat Team TNA for, I don't know why they even had that match, but I guess just to get them on the pay-per-view. But how are you feeling about this Bang Bang Scissor Gang thing?
It's criminal that Jay White is in a 12-man tag. Like, it's just such a waste of his talent. And, that, you know, like we said many times before, the part of the problem with AEW and a lot of their matches is you don't really care who wins or loses. Like, I love a lot of people in this match. The Guns we're friends with, and Jay Lethal, and... you know, pretty much everyone we know in this match. I mean, I've never met Satnam Singh, but like, it was just like, okay. I mean, I get it's 0 hour. You got to warm up the crowd. This is like the opening act in stand up, but I would have not had this match altogether and just put Jay White in a singles match against anybody.
Yeah. 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 That's a big issue with them, man. They have too much talent and they want to get everybody on the pay-per-view, but then you end up with this mess where like, it doesn't even matter. I didn't even watch it. I watched the highlights. I just watched clips of it. Because honestly, I mean, there's no stakes.
It was a fun match. I mean, there was a segment with Jay White and Satnam Singh that was pretty funny. And, you know, there's a couple funny spots. And you know, Austin Gunn overselling like he always does is so funny to me. But, and like I said, I understand it's the first match of the night. You have to warm up the crowd. You just can't start off with Ospreay and Takeshita, but I don't know. I just think there's a way better use of Jay White than what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, how do you feel about the actual faction of, you know, Now we're expected that the Guns are cool with their dad. They keep kind of teasing Jay White is going to turn on them in a way, kind of, like, very vaguely. But, I mean, do you think this is smart to have the Trios champs on both brands, ROH and AEW, together like that?
I mean, it's just too muddy. It's just, and it's funny. They're doing it for the T-shirts, and the T-shirts are cool. The Bang Bang Scissor Gang, but I just it's not doing it for me, you know. Mm. And you've noticed, not Bowens, the Caster's raps are getting a little less pop than they used to. You know, just, I don't know if he writes his own raps or not, but it's not as funny or effective as it used to be.
Well, actually, I think they're running an angle right now, because the last two that I saw, he doesn't even do them. There was one that he started and then kind of like halfway kind of like stopped doing it. Like, he forgot the words and then just went into the ring. I was like, forget it. And then he just went in, and they didn't even address it. Like, the commentary didn't address it. The people in the ring didn't, they just went up and did their pose, and that was, and then the match happened, but he never finished the rap, and they just jumped over to Bowens doing the whole, you know, whatever city they're in. Yeah. And I don't know. I it might be an angle, because even I think the last time I saw, he came out, started rapping, and someone stopped him, and then they just kept going. I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if it was a botch or if they're now they're just pulling an angle with that.
Well, I think the first one was an actual botch, and then probably someone, for once in AEW, had a good idea of like, hey, let's turn this into an angle. Like, so you can tell now that Jay White's like, they're setting up something with Jay White and Caster, which I don't really care to see. I mean, you know, with Ospreay here now and Okada coming, you know, you could just run back some New Japan matches that casual fans don't know about. Like, you could have, you know, Jay White and Ospreay, Jay White and Okada, Jay White and Samoa Joe. Like, there's 1,000 matches you could have for Jay White. So, you know, maybe something with the Bullet Club, you know, from maybe Finley comes over, but you'd have to explain who he is to the casual fan. But there's just 1,000 things you could do. I mean, Jay White and Max Caster does not, nothing against Caster, but like, it just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, maybe this is an audible because Juice got hurt. I'm thinking in my brain, it would have made more sense to have Juice and the Guns as the Trios champs, and then have Jay be the leader of the Bullet Club going after a singles title. That way they have all the, you know, they have a bunch, everybody has gold. And I think that might have been the plan, but since Juice got hurt, they're like, fuck it, we'll give it to Jay White. But yeah, I'm with you, man. It's not really working for me right now. And I'm a big fan, obviously, of the Guns and Jay White. So I don't know. It's sad, but hopefully they turn it around. We also got Willow Nightingale and Chris Statlander with Stokely as their manager, beating Julia Hart and Sky Blue, which is weird. Why are you having your TBS champion get pinned, or not? I don't know if she got pinned, but losing matches.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, with Mercedes Moné coming in next Wednesday in Boston, you know, they got to be careful with her, because there's really not that many good opponents for her in AEW outside of, to me, Toni Storm and Julia Hart. So I would be building up Julia Hart,
who's probably too loose.
Yeah, I mean, but, and she's probably too green at the age of 22 to be, you know, Sasha Banks or Mercedes is going to have to carry her. So she might be, it might be too soon for her. But outside of that, it's Toni Storm, unless Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker come back. So yeah, I would not have had her lose in any capacity. And, you know, I didn't really care who won or lost this match. Like, I really thought Julia Hart and Sky Blue would win, because they've been pushing Sky Blue for 6 to 8 months.
Yeah.
I mean, since before we stopped doing the Comedy Store Wrestling podcast. So I don't, that's a decision where I'd like love to be in the room of the creative and just listen to go, okay, let me see how this makes any sense at all.
I think it's because they're going off of a lot of the crowd pops, and I think because Statlander and Willow and Stokely have been doing some funny stuff on TV together. Like Stokely's hilarious, so it you know, they have been popping off, and they just go and they just follow that. They just like, oh, well, they're getting some good reactions, so let's just have them win, even though it doesn't make any sense because the, you know, the other team you have your champion. It just seems like a lot of off-the-cuff thinking there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the best way to put it. It's like they just – something just pops up in someone's mind like they're an 8-year-old. Hey, let's do this. You know, and it's just like, okay, I guess. Like, you know, they announced – Not to go back to Jay White for a second, but you know, they just randomly announced in Boston he's fighting Darby Allin. Like, there's no
Darby didn't even know. I don't know if you saw the press conference, but Darby had no idea.
But like, there's no build up. I mean, I'm glad it's finally a singles match for Jay, and but it's just like, that's a typical AEW. We got a week to probably that will probably be the biggest dynamite ever. In terms of, you know, the debut of Sasha. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of, you know, it's probably a good match. I mean, you know, Darby can, if he's physically able to, after that glass spot, then we'll talk about that later. But like, you know, I'd like a little bit. Okay, why are they fighting all of a sudden out of the blue?
Yeah, like I know a lot of people say this online, and it's not confirmed. It's not like we know for a fact that Tony Khan is a giant cokehead, but everybody talks about it, and this doesn't help the perception, because I know a lot of cokeheads, and that's the type of decisions they make. They just off the cuff quickly, like they get a little thought, and they're like, "Yeah, man, let's fucking do it," and it like doesn't make sense. They just want to do it at that moment, and that's what it feels like for sure. I'm not claiming he's a cokehead, but, you know.
I mean, I you know, I've not heard the best things about him, but, like, you know, I mean, I'm assuming if Sting works with him, Sting wouldn't tolerate that kind of shit. Yeah. So, you know, I know people who have not had pleasurable experiences with him. And, you know, like the one night Bray Wyatt was at the store and I said, "Hey, man, you're going to go to AEW?" And he just looked at me and was like, "Don't get me started on Tony Khan." So, and Bray Wyatt was the nicest guy. Like, so if he has a problem with you, you know, the problem is more you than him.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, I just think they need someone like a quality control person in the creative. Because I get the feeling like Sanjay Dutt, and I think there's a couple others who are the main creative team. Go, "No, that's not a good idea, man. You know, like, that's not going to work."
Well, another thing I've been hearing on the dirt sheets, which who knows what's real and what's not anymore. But a lot of times what I'm hearing is that Tony Khan will come up with an idea and then the talent tells him no. And instead of him pulling like a Vince McMahon and being like, "Doesn't matter, this is what you're doing, because this is my company and my idea," he bends to their will. So like, if they're like, "Hey, you're going to do this," and they're like, "Nope, I'm not doing that," he goes, "Okay," and he just moves on. And I think that's the reason that was brought up. It was people like Miro or there was another talent that they mentioned, but there was like, he had an idea, but Miro didn't like the idea and said no. And then they just never put him back on TV. And that's why he's been off TV for a bit, because the plan that Tony had got shut down. And instead of, you know, putting his foot down, like saying, "No, man, you know, you work for me, here's the plan," he's kind of just bending to he's being a mark and just being like, "Okay," you know, and we end up with a lot of scrambly things.
Well, it's like the devil storyline, I think, is the perfect expose, or whatever you want to call it, into the AEW creative. Like, that to me is the best storyline in AEW history. It's the perfect amount of time. Now, I don't know if it was done on purpose, but each attack from Jay White to the Acclaim to Hangman Page, the attackers, I believe, were different people. Like, you know, the first group was kind of skinny. Second group, some of them skinny, some of them big. I know Sean Spears said in one of the attacks he was one of the henchmen. And then the third attack, they were all fucking giant. I mean, the devil, I don't know who that last devil was, but it was not Adam Cole.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that was done on purpose or the writer said, hey, let's make it a different group. And then, you know, the reveal actually made sense on paper. Like, you know, the Kingdom, you know, NXT, they all had a history with each other, but Wardlow being thrown in that group made zero sense at all. And then, like, the creative knew Adam Cole's hurt. You know MJF's taking time off. So now the Kingdom and Roderick Strong are left to carry the, like, the torch. And outside of Roderick Strong, the Kingdom's never really gotten a pop. So it just, it wasn't good long-term thinking.
Yeah.
And now Wardlow doesn't come out with him half the time. So is he in the group or isn't he? So that's where I think they need a, like, almost an outside, not a fan, but, like, someone who has a vested interest in the storylines, who's not just going to tell Tony Khan, this is a great idea, Tony.
Yeah. Well, since we're talking about Wardlow, I mean, his match is a little later in the card, but let's just talk about it. I mean, I think he won that multi-man match that was supposed to be a meat match, and then it just became something else.
The scramble, the eight-man scramble.
The eight-man scramble. Like, what was the point of that? Like, why did we have that match? That match did not need to be on the pay-per-view.
I mean, it was a clusterfuck because you have all these giant dudes. I think Bully Ray said this as well, but I thought it as soon as I was watching, like, oh, there's too many big guys in here. Like, and you could tell, like Lance Archer's waiting for his spot, but he's acting like he's hurt, but he's just clearly waiting for the ring to clear so he could have room.
Yeah.
No one knew who Magnus was. I mean, I think the crowd at one point was chanting, not Commander. You know, there's really no explanation as to why he's in there. Like, I get you have to have Jericho on it because he's a name. I mean, he does sell a few extra pay-per-views. I get it.
Yeah.
But he didn't really make sense in there. And, you know, I get Wardlow winning, but I don't know. It was just, I don't know if I would say it was an unnecessary match, but it just could have been shaved down a few minutes or shaved a few
people.
Like, I think Lance Archer's criminally underused by AEW, but you could have probably taken him and Magnus out so there's a little more room in the ring.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Wardlow off the heels of, like, one of the best promos of his entire career on, I think it was Dynamite or Rampage, but when he started running down everybody, like, hey, I beat everyone. I beat MJF, I beat, you know, everybody. So why am I not, you know, the biggest thing in this company? So that was a really, really good promo. I don't know if you saw that one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he even threw a little hidden shade at CM Punk saying that guy is still injured. So, you know, I understand you got to get Wardlow in there and have him win a match. But, you know, it's just, once again, it just seems like someone in creative just, oh, let's just throw a bunch of dudes in the ring and Wardlow will win, you know. And you know, it's like another thing that drove me insane about this is how do you not have Ricky Starks and Big Bill on the show in any capacity? Like, your ex-tag team champs, recent ex-tag team champs, and they're not on the card at all.
At all. Like, not even on the kickoff.
Yeah, they're not even in 0 hour. So, yeah. And I know it's like, because if the roster's so bloated, you can't have everyone on it. But they're your tag team champs, recent ones. So I just, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little weird. Yeah. That's a little weird. Also on the 0 hour, Pac is back, apparently, which there was some talk that he might not be able to come back because of his injuries. But thankfully, he's back. I'm excited to see what they do with him. But, I mean, do they put him back with Death Triangle with the Lucha Brothers, or do we do a singles run with him? I mean, that, talk about untapped potential. Pac is got it all, and they haven't done anything with him.
Yeah, I'd be down with Jay White and Pac. You know, that'd be a great fucking match.
That'd be an amazing match, yeah.
Or Ospreay and, you know, Pac, or
Ospreay and Pac would be insane. Very high flying, fast, insane moves. I think would be great. Do we know Okada's coming?
That's what I hear. I mean, I don't think he's I just don't see WWE using him correctly. I mean, I do think the better matches for him are in AEW, just because, like you know what happens in New Japan, but the majority of American fans don't. So, I think it's appealing. You could have him and Omega again when he comes back. Not going to be anytime soon, but Ospreay and Okada. I mean, there's a million matches you could have. And for London, which isn't, obviously it's a ways away, but it's an international card. So I would think Okada being on it would definitely help in person and pay-per-view numbers.
Yeah, I think there's talk about him debuting at that Big Business because, he is the rainmaker and he opens his hands and money flies out. So they're like, yes, obviously Mercedes Moné is happening, but maybe there's an extra secret with Okada showing up as well.
I mean, I would be surprised if they did that, because I would think they would want the shine to go all towards Mercedes. I mean, that would be an amazing dynamite if they both showed up. I mean, it'll, be interesting. Or they could save him for another dynamite. I mean, you shoot all your wad on one dynamite, that next dynamite's going to be pretty weak, probably. So, I mean, I personally would say wait 2 weeks, let him debut at like the next semi big dynamite. But we'll see what happens.
Or maybe that pay-per-view they announced, that Dynasty, I think it's called, AEW Dynasty.
Yeah, I don't know if they would wait that long. I mean, he's done in New Japan, so
That's
he's
true.
probably like, hey, let's get it started. I'm ready.
Yeah.
I just hope they don't rush it and give him like the Jay White treatment of, when Jay debuted, I had no idea who he was. I'm like, who's this guy? Which
Yeah.
is crazy to say now, but I think you have to do a better job of these New Japan guys explaining who they are. Obviously Okada's a pretty big name, but still the significance of him being here, I think, should be given at least a 2 minute intro video or highlight reel or, something.
Well, they actually have been doing that. Not with Okada, but they did Will Ospreay when I sent it to you. They're doing AEW stories on YouTube, which, is a good idea, but those should be on TV as well because a lot of people don't go to the YouTube channel. A lot of people watch it
Yeah, like
just watch a TV channel,
I don't go on the YouTube channel very much, so and even with Mercedes, obviously she's going to bring some WWE eyes to the product, which is what AEW has been lacking for a very long time. But even she needs that treatment of like, hey, this, I mean, now they can't show highlights of her in WWE, but they need to explain how significant she is to, oh my God, she's here. So otherwise it'll be it'll be trending on Twitter, which will help them. So but they need to do a better job of explaining who some of these outside people are.
Moving on, they also had Christian Cage defending his TNT title against Daniel Garcia, which, while it was a good match and everything, and I'm happy that Garcia got a title shot. It's also, it felt pointless because Christian Cage isn't going to drop that title to anybody but Edge or Adam Copeland, sorry. Daniel Garcia wasn't going to win that match. It's a little too predictable.
I mean, I like the match. I think that was the first match on
On the main card, yeah.
the main card. So I thought it was a good opener. And Christian's like, this is the best run he's ever had. Like,
Oh yeah, the patriarchy is the best.
and even Nick Wayne's mom is like getting better at, her heel, not managerial role, but just, she's getting better each, more comfortable on camera, you could tell. I think they are underusing Nick Wayne. He should be in the ring, man, not a third banana on Christian's team. and Luchasaurus or Kill Switch. You know, he does the cowardly, Diesel basically to Christian. I mean, it was good. I mean, I think it was the perfect opener. It got the crowd warmed up. Like you said, a little predictable of an outcome, but that's something I didn't think of. How do you not have Adam Copeland on this card in any capacity?
Yeah, he could have interfered in that match.
Yeah, setting something up, for maybe Dynasty or like maybe there's a beat down with Daniel Garcia and Edge comes out. That would have got a big pop.
Yeah.
Maybe he's hurt. I don't know. But it's just like unforgivable to not have him involved at all.
Yeah. And what is potentially, or according to Tony Khan, the best pay-per-view ever. That's what he
I
called
mean,
it.
it was pretty good. I'll say that. It wasn't perfect. Obviously, we're not even a quarter of the way into critiquing it, and we have a lot of critiques for it, but
Yeah.
I thought the way it ended was, most pay-per-views kind of like, okay, they drag toward the end. I mean the last two matches, which we'll get into, I thought was an amazing way to like end it.
Yeah. My favorite match of the card was Kingston versus Danielson. Man, did they lay it in. They were slapping the crap out of each other. I thought that was a fantastic match. I know a lot of people say the match of the night was Ospreay, and we'll get to that one too, but to me this was the match of the night because that's the type of wrestling I like. That just hard hitting, chopping the fuck out of each other. And then also the ending of it, having Danielson finally acknowledge Eddie Kingston and shake his hand, and I even like the way he did that because he was fucking with him, and at the end he's like, "I'm fucking with you, man," and just gives him the handshake. I thought it was really great, really, really great.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the problem with Kingston is his matches are pretty similar. Like, it's the chop chops, it's the getting exhausted 2 minutes into the match. Like, I think he's playing that up.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people give Moxley shit for the same thing. It's fairly repetitive, the structure of their match, but it was a good match. I mean, it wasn't really to rank it in terms of what matches I liked, it would be toward the bottom for me. Not because it wasn't good, but I just like some of the other matches a lot better.
Yeah.
I mean, they're two pros, and like, it's a match that to me is like, I'm not tired of seeing them go at each other, so it's kind of fresh for me to see these guys. But I don't know, I just think, and I love the physical dynamic between them. You have this one super jacked guy in Danielson and Eddie Kingston with maybe the worst body in pro wrestling, but he's a great wrestler. Like, he's in shape. He's just got a horrible looking body.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like he has scoliosis of the chest. But yeah, I mean, it was good. I mean, not but a nice build towards the end of the card. Like, it wasn't like, I don't think there was a lot of Monday morning water cooler moments of like, did you see what Kingston did? But it was a good match.
Yeah. For me, I know for, that to me it's a personal thing where I thought it was the best match just because I like the choppy chops, man. I'll watch Suzuki and Ishii chop the shit out of each other on repeat for the rest of my life and be happy with it. So that match spoke to me personally because I do like the New Japan. I like the tribute that Eddie is doing basically to Kawada and all of his heroes, and the triple crown thing is cool. And also, the King of the Bums, man. I'm an Eddie from New York, New Jersey, so I relate. He's my, and I also have a body that does not belong in the ring or on camera. So I relate the most to Kingston.
I would agree with that. No. I mean, I do like how he's basically the AEW version of Dusty Rhodes. Like, Dusty Rhodes had a horrible body, and he was like the common man, So I think a lot of people look at Eddie Kingston in the crowd and on TV and go, I look like that guy, which is
Yeah.
great because they bond with him. So, and he's a great wrestler. I just think it's funny. I love those, matches where one guy has a great body and the other doesn't, because you
Yeah.
kind of you get that underdog vibe of this guy shouldn't win with a body like that. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I think we've all seen some of the AEW pay-per-views. Where they have Omega and Ospreay that one time in the beginning of the card, and it's like no match could follow it. I thought this card was very well paced in terms of the build.
Yeah, they're getting better at that for sure. Yeah.
Although I did know, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but overall I didn't like that every match seemed to be around, with the exception of the last two because of the circumstances, around the same time. So there wasn't like a lot of peaks and valleys. It was just kind of like straight line. Every match is about, I would estimate, you know, 10 to 12 minutes. You could tell the end was like, okay, we got guys, you're on your last minute, let's go. So I would have liked to see like maybe one squash match, then a long match, then a medium match, but you know, that's nitpicking, I guess.
We also had Roderick Strong beating Orange Cassidy and becoming the new international champion, which, you know, I kind of was expecting as well. Not super predictable, but I was expecting it because, you know, Cassidy's all banged up and he's got to take a break. And every time he tries to take a break, somebody gets injured and they have to swap him back in. So he needed a break, and Roderick Strong's been getting more popular and, you know, working the angle with the, now he's just screaming everybody's name, which I think is hilarious. Like, Orange! But it was cool to see him. And then also we had a little surprise at the end of it with Kyle O'Reilly coming back, which I thought was pretty cool. He looked really sickly, though. Like, his eyes were really, the bags were out and, like, dark. So I don't know if he's, maybe that was part of the look intentionally, or he's just still kind of recovering from all his issues. But it was good to see him, and I hope we get to see more.
Yeah, and I liked how they teased, is he a good guy or a bad guy? Like, they gave him the Kingdom shirt and he didn't take it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have history. Like, so on paper, this storyline, whatever they're doing with him, makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I thought he should have been one of the Devil's henchmen, you know, instead of Wardlow. That to me would have made complete sense. And if he would take off the mask, it's, oh my God, O'Reilly's back. I thought that would have been a better pop. You know, he's a great performer, and like, yeah, he did. His eyes look like Mick Mars from Motley Crue. Like, he had no whites. Like, it was like he looked like an alien. Maybe they did that on purpose. Like, I mean, the bags under his eyes, I don't think was done on purpose. I think you just like, I'm surprised more people don't look like him. Like, the travel that these guys do, like, and you know, they're not putting eye, deep puffers on. They're just 17-hour flight to Japan, wake up, I don't need no moisturizer. I mean, that was fun. I mean, I like Roderick Strong. I mean, he has to carry the load for the Devil's crew. And I don't even know if that's a crew anymore. Like, there's no Devil merchandise. There's virtually none. You know, they dropped the ball on the merch for that, for sure.
Yeah, they made that one shirt, which is half the Devil face, half Adam Cole's face. But, you know, I think the Devil concept is gone. I think it's just now the Undisputed Kingdom moving forward. And, like, the Devil character is just... I think the Devil character is reserved specifically for MJF. And until he's on his way back to TV, I don't think we're going to see it again.
Well, I did look on, I guess it's Shop AEW, but the Morse and the Pro Wrestling Tees. They had one Devil shirt that said, I am him. But it was so, and the Devil is in the letters. Like, it didn't look, it wasn't a good shirt. And then they had a Devil hoodie. But I would have thought, you put mask on there. Like, WWE would have had mask. They would have had, you know, the Devil's henchmen's jackets, the track jackets. They would have had Devil gloves. I mean, that's where they really kill it over AEW, production and merchandising.
For sure. For sure. Then after that, we got Toni Storm defending against Deonna Purrazzo. You know, I think they did the right move keeping the belt on Toni, but, they need, like you were saying earlier, they don't have enough women to challenge, you know, Mercedes Moné. They need to build more and maybe a different type of ending that would put over Deanna a little stronger would have worked out here. I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch the match. I watched the highlights of this match because I was out. Circle Six had their own anniversary show that same exact time. So I had to watch clips and then catch some of the matches for the Revolution. So I didn't watch all of it. But I mean, I would say they could have built Deanna Purrazzo a little more on this. Maybe a shenanigans ending so they can have another match down the road. I don't know.
I mean, I would have somehow teased Mercedes in this match, but, you know, maybe a female in a mask comes out, maybe a female devil or something along those lines where it's clear. It doesn't even have to be her underneath it. You can just get like a body double. And so that way it sets something up for that debut in Boston a little better. Because I do think Toni Storm should be her first opponent, and you know she's going to beat her. So, you know, just would add a little more intrigue. Oh my God, who's that? You know, the devil storyline was good in turn. I have friends of mine, or friends of ours, I should say, in WWE going, who do you think it is? Like, no one knew.
Yeah.
I do think they could have maybe done something like, because the match was okay. It wasn't like, and it was probably in a bad spot, you know, on the card. Like, I would have put this early on in the match, or early on in the card. You know, it was probably the weakest match out of all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they got to start working on building more women up if they want. I honestly disagree. I don't think Mercedes Moné should go for Toni first. They let her build it up. You know, like you said, they need to kind of teach people who she is. And they can't show WWE footage. So, and there's very limited footage of her in New Japan. So just be like, hey, here's this big star. She's a movie or TV star because she was in The Mandalorian. And she did some great work in Japan and all over the world. And have her, you know, run through a few women first. Maybe a squash match here or there just to kind of get her feet underneath her, you know. And then lead to a big pay-per-view against Toni. But I don't think Toni should be her first opponent. For sure.
Yeah, I do. Like, just because, I mean, just you could big. Give her a match like Abaddon, I mean, I don't know what Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter's status is, you know, because Hayter's been out for a while. I'm going to assume she's close to returning. So I just think that Sasha is such a fucking star. I wouldn't, you know, it just, I think you got to put the title on her right away and just have people coming for her. Because I do think that I love the Toni Storm character. Like, you know, she is really very funny at that 50s movie star, you know, starlet, like Marilyn Monroe type.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think the bald guy Luther adds much to it, but like that, I think we talked about it. I would have much rather seen RJ City in that role. But I don't think you should waste her on, like, I guess you could have her against Donna, you know. But her, I don't know. I just, or Willow. I mean, I think that's who she got injured against at the New Japan show we were at.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but I just think you teasing that, you know, interfering in that match in some capacity at least gets people talking a little bit. Because as they're doing it now with Mercedes, she's just going to show up and a lot of people are going to be like, not a lot, but a few people are going to be like, who is this?
Yeah.
So I think there's got to be some way. Or maybe the match is over and someone comes in the mask. And what's Mercedes' finishing move?
The bank statement. I think it's a submission.
If you do a bank statement on her, it doesn't even have to be her, and then she drops some money over her, or whatever the logo. I mean, does she have like a special logo, like?
The money signs on the boss thing. The whole she's the boss because They kind of put that in, it's in the poster for Big Business. The S's are like the dollar sign S's that looks just like her boss logo.
But yeah, right. So maybe she looks over Tony Storm and goes like this and then just walks off. Just teasing. It's something to go, oh shit, she's coming. Like,
yeah,
it's like a warning shot. So, because that's what AEW, like we said, lacks. They just, you know, even with the Golden Lovers, they didn't really do a great job of explaining who those guys are, or the significance of, oh my God, Ibushi and Omega are back. Like, this is like, it should have been like a much bigger deal, but it just kind of fell flat.
There's another one. Where's Ibushi at? He's all elite. Where the fuck is he at?
Yeah, I mean, they make these debuts and then, you know, even with Ospreay originally, when he came in, and you know, initially, you know, I guess it would be his debut. Just was like, okay, who's this guy? You know, and Shivani's doing a good job of, oh my God, it's, you know, Ospreay from United Empire. But at that time, no one knew who he was really. So yeah. I was like, okay, who's this guy just going like this? so, and I do think, well, we'll talk about it. The Kyle Fletcher match this Wednesday makes zero sense to me, but we'll get into that later.
Well, actually, no, we'll get into it now. It's the next match on the card is Ospreay, the Ospreay official All Elite debut of him being a member of the roster versus Takeshita. I think it's just Don Callis. They don't really have a plan, so he's just using his people against each other, I guess, to test them. Iron sharpens iron, I guess, in that kind of mentality. But Ospreay and Takeshita, from according to a lot of people on the internet, that was the match of the night. And it was. It was a fantastic, you know, what you would expect from Ospreay, really, and from Takeshita, because Takeshita's amazing, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this was by far and away the match of the night. Like, there were several water cooler moments. Did you see that? Did you see this move? Did you see that? I mean, to me, it never made sense to have Ospreay align with Callis because he's United Empire. He doesn't need the Callis family. So I'm assuming some kind of swerve is happening with Ospreay and Fletcher. I'm assuming a reuniting of United Empire, and then they'll go against the Callis family. Like, that's somewhat good planning. You know, maybe Mark Davis is back. I know he's been injured for a long time. But the match with Takeshita is like, it was a near perfect match. I don't think there was one botch, which is crazy because there's a lot of wacky. I mean, maybe Ospreay's, I don't think that lower back injury, that maybe was a bit of a botch on Takeshita's part because it seemed like he dropped Ospreay a little lower on the corner than he should have.
Yeah, he got a big bruise. I saw the press conference. He had a bruise back there. It's pretty banged up.
That was probably close to being a lacerated kidney. That was an instant bruise. So that was probably only like a semi-botch of the match. Just a perfect match. The crowd was super hot. I would say Ospreay was more over than anyone but Sting that night, which is impressive that, you know, that probably 80% of that crowd was there for Sting.
Yeah.
And they probably didn't have a lot of investment into any of the other matches. And Ospreay was over. Like, he's already over. I just hope they don't give him the Jay White treatment and have him in fucking 12-man tags or, you know, he's a single star. You know, he should be. Now, I don't know if he can keep up. My only concern with him is, like, as you know, it's like Omega's breaking down slowly by slowly because of the style he's wrestled for the last 10 years. And I mean, I would think Ospreay is going to have the same fate, not this year or next year, but like, I don't know how he can do that style for much longer without breaking down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe that answers your question about the United Empire thing and why is he with Callis, is that, you know, maybe they do see that he's a single star. And also maybe the United Empire is like a New Japan thing and they want to start fresh with him here. But I think he'll be leaving the Callis family pretty soon. For sure.
Do you know what Mark Davis' status is?
No, I think he's still just injured. I don't know if he's better or, waiting for a story. I don't think he's waiting for a story. I think he's just still out injured. All right. And then let's see. We had Samoa Joe defending the world title against Swerve and Hangman, which I'm gonna be honest, I didn't really care for all that much either, 'cause it was mostly just Hangman and Swerve busy with each other. And Joe's been on really, I like him as champion. I like his approach to the championship where, the rankings matter. You have to win matches in order to earn a right to fight him. But it just felt kind of discarded here because everybody was more focused on Swerve and Hangman. And Hangman doing also some of his best promo work recently. He had this really unhinged promo right before this match that I loved. And that's what I want to see more of from him. I don't know if you
Yeah,
saw
I
that one.
mean, he's definitely getting better at the promos. He reminds me of this generation's Magnum TA, ironically enough, who was in the crowd.
Yeah.
And you could tell he's paying a tribute to Magnum TA with I mean,
The
younger fans would
stash.
probably get the stash and the hair, the overall, the curly lock, basically like a curly mullet, and the 5 o'clock shadow is straight up Magnum TA. It's a clear tribute to him. I would have made Swerve champ. You get a little extra pop from having an African American champ. That would be trending. I mean, Samoa Joe definitely adds credibility to any title or any storyline. He looks like he could do everything he does for real if he
Yeah.
was asked to. I do like the unhinged Hangman, but since Swerve's already beat him twice, I don't really care as much. I would have had Hangman win at least one of those matches so it could be like, I just don't care about their interactions enough because it's like Swerve's 2-0 against them.
Yeah.
But I do like the unhinged Hangman and the storyline of you're never going to win this title, like he's perpetually chasing the ghost of Swerve. So I don't know where they go from here. I mean, Samoa Joe's going to be good against anybody. Like he's very nimble,
Yeah.
for a guy at 330 pounds. Like, so I'm okay with him having the title. He's paid his dues. So, I could see him, I mean, maybe him and Okada. That'd be an amazing match. And
Yeah.
fresh. Like people never see, I don't believe they've ever gone at each other.
If they have, it
So.
was like in the Indies or something like that, like or maybe in New Japan once when Joe was younger. But yeah, that's definitely a match that needs to happen soon, for sure.
Or Ospreay and Samoa Joe. I mean, that'd be an awesome match. Like, and maybe an opportunity for Ospreay to save his body a little bit, not have to do so many of the shooting star twisting presses.
Yeah.
So, because I'm going to assume long term, if I'm on the creative team, you're building towards Ospreay winning in London.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would be MJF, which would be awesome. I mean, can you imagine the promos between those two? Like, wow.
Yeah.
And wrestling would be through the roof. So, I do think there's some, I mean, Swerve's in. I mean, there's some good potential title matches, Swerve, Samoa Joe, Ospreay, Okada, Jay Wyatt, if he can rehabilitate his, recent
Image,
storylines.
yeah.
I mean, I just like I know I'm talking about him probably too much, but like he just to me is like he's perfect. Like he's got the great body, he's great on the mic. I mean, that one promo he had with MJF, it's like I want to see more of this. He has it. What I don't even know what it is, but he has it.
This is why
So
I always was a big Bullet Club guy. If you look at the history of Bullet Club leaders, they've all been, I mean, Finn Balor was the creator, basically, one of the first ones. You had AJ Styles, who's a beast, world champion, Kenny Omega, Adam Cole, now Jay White, not now, but Jay White. And now they have David Finley, which I'm sure he'll grow into that role soon. I'm sure eventually he'll, you know, we'll see him in more WWE or AEW programming. But, you know, that Bullet Club always had these young guys that were their leaders that at the time they're like, oh, there's potential. But then they ended up becoming these beasts. So that's one of the reasons I always loved the Bullet Club. But we're getting close in time here. So I'm going to let's talk about the final. The Stinger, man.
I mean, I got a few extra minutes.
Okay. Well, the Stinger match, you know, the I'll start with the promo video they did beforehand of him in the theater. That was beautiful, man. I got teary-eyed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, and, you know, I think that the promo last week, I didn't know Sting's dad had just passed. Oh, like, yeah. So, you know, that promo, like, it was like sad. I mean, like, very emotional. Like, you could tell Sting, obviously, he's going to be sad, but the fact that he's still, like, I wouldn't have blamed him if he said, I can't do this pay per view. We're going to have to, I can't. But so, what a pro Sting is, you know, and that theater promo was like, it's pretty, I mean, I actually wish the tribute video was a little longer because of his history of just, I mean, 40 years of almost of, you know, Flair, Nikita Koloff, you know, Magnum TA, Luger, getting kicked out of the Horsemen by Ole Anderson. I thought that would have been a nice, if you could somehow squeeze in a tribute to Ole in that. But, you know, that's nitpicking.
Well, it's also the WWE didn't give them permission to use all that footage because they own all the WCW footage. So it's
oh, okay. It's, well, that makes sense then. But, yeah, I mean, it was a great video. And, you know, the sun's coming out. It's different eras of Sting. That was pretty fucking neat.
Like, the one with the surfer one, the blonde dude, man, he looks just like him. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little, not flabby, but, I mean, thicker. No one's going to look like surfers. Yeah, but still looks great. I mean, it wasn't like, oh my God, this is a slob. But, I mean, that was just, they did this right. I mean, AEW gets a lot of shit from us and many others. The way Sting went out, just everything was near perfect. And the music, Seek and Destroy, like that costs a pretty penny.
Oh, yeah.
As you know.
Yeah.
So as much as we critique Tony Khan, he does, you know, I think if he respects you and likes you, he does do you right.
Yeah, it was a good send-off.
Like, he didn't have to get sick.
He didn't have to what?
I mean, he didn't have to get Seek and Destroy. Like, he could have just had the snow theme or whatever it's called, and, you know, people would have been happy. But he went the extra mile for Sting, you could tell.
Absolutely, yeah. And the tribute with the sun, the tribute video, the sun, the sun's coming out in the costume, the Seek and Destroy, all perfect to introduce. And then the match itself was insane. I mean, Darby, for the love of God, man. Like, even my wife was, we were watching it, and when he went through the glass and just immediately started bleeding from every corner of his back and arms, I was just like, what the fuck, dude? Unnecessary.
I mean, when I first saw that, I thought, oh, he's going to do the, what was it, the Wardlow spot where he, there's some spot where Darby had chairs lined up, but they were facing each other. It's very much that. You know, six chairs, so three with the backs facing each other. And I think it was against Wardlow, and he missed. And so his spine hit them. Like, I'm like, my God, he's going to do that, but with glass. And, like, I first was like, ah, man, this is taking away some shine from Sting. It was an unnecessary spot, I thought, because the way it was executed, you could tell if you watch again, you'll see the Bucks get out of the way like, oh, we're gonna fuck up the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, like, now maybe they said, hey, you're not falling on me with a sheet of glass as the you know, the soft spot, you can jump on it yourself, it ain't gonna be me. But the more I thought about it, I bet you Sting told him, hey, you want to do that spot, get your shine. Like, this is your, you know, I'll get the rest. You do your thing. So I'm sure Sting told him, you want to do one wacky spot, you have my full permission.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, they...
But I don't...
No, yeah, I was going to say, this last couple of matches with Stinger, there's always a wacky spot, and it's usually him, you know, jumping off of a second story or something through a table, you know, so I expected a wacky spot, for sure. I just didn't think it would be that.
Yeah, I mean, at first I thought, okay, he's got a little blood on his back, you know, like the upper left was like spackled. I'm like, all right, that's... But then when the camera, like, that, he looked like he had about a 5-inch gash on his, like, where Ospreay's injury was, right around his kidney. And I'm like, oh, man, that, I mean, I'm not going to say it. I thought he was going to die. But, like, that could be a real, like, I'm not saying I thought he was going to bleed out. But, like, that was a, you know, and I don't know what they tied around. It looked like black duct tape. I'm like, that doesn't look very, I don't know about that. But,
yeah.
I mean, it was definitely the spot of the night and maybe the spot of the year in terms of, like, did you see that?
Yeah, that's the water cooler moment, obviously, aside from the talking about the retirement. Like, that was the spot that people were, you know, constant videos all through my stream of that, different angles. There was an angle, actually, from Flash Garments, who's the guy who does the Swerve song with Swerve, who was front row. And he apparently Ric Flair got cut up with some of that glass.
I could see that.
Yeah, his ankle got sliced, and like he zooms in, you see the ankle sliced with glass and just bleeding out, and like the medics trying to help him out. I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
I mean, it's like I'm still like kind of in awe of the spot. Like you can see, I don't know what Jackson got the, but like, kind of like tapped brother on the shoulder, hey, let's get out of the way. Like, they didn't want any part of this spot. But I would like to, because I know you're friends with them, and it's not being talked about enough. I thought the Young Bucks, I initially wasn't a fan of the pairing for Sting in his last match, because I'm like, they don't really have a history with him. And it seems like kind of rushed that they're making them the heels, because it's just, there's no... I thought the Young Bucks were great heels in this match.
Yeah, I love their new character. It's kind of like Succession, the show Succession. They have right. Like the music and the suits and everything. I love their Michael and Nicholas, or is it not Michael? Sorry, Nicholas and Matthew Jackson. Not that I love that they're going that angle, the EVP angle.
Well, I do think they're smart. I mean, listen, people don't like them because of the whole Elite and the CM Punk, you know, exit and the backstage brawl and the backstage politics. So I do, you know, this is something Vince would have them do. Hey, lean into this. People don't like you. Act cocky. Like, you know, so I do like that. It'll be interesting when Omega comes back. Will he go against them, you know, or join them? So I thought they were outstanding heels. They did win me over, although I did think, this was about a 6-week storyline. Felt a little rushed, but I, you know, in fairness to them, I don't know who else would have been a good. You would have had to have a tag because Sting can't. It's 64, close to 65 now. Probably Carry wrestle on his own.
Yeah.
I mean, my only, not necessarily complaint, I thought it would have been really cool. Now, I don't know if this would have been possible because of Luger's wheelchair, but it would have been awesome at some point to have Nikita Koloff, and Magnum TA, he's not very mobile, to have them together, maybe at the top of the ramp or something. Like, that would have been like a great nostalgia, like, here are some of his greatest opponents, Flair, Nikita Koloff, who's in pretty good shape for his age.
Oh, Ricky Steamboat, I forgot. Yeah, he was there too.
Steamboat, and I don't know if other people were invited or, you know, probably they're dead.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing I would have liked to have seen, is somehow get all those people who were in the front row behind the announcers just have them have a moment with Sting. But you know, it was a pretty perfect match, I thought.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, there is the one discussion of you know, usually tradition is you go out on your back. And Sting went out undefeated. It's kind of like some people were complaining about that. You know, I think even Bully was complaining of like you always put over the next talent that's going to take over when you're gone. But yeah, I you know, it just felt right, even though it's not tradition. It felt right to have him win and kind of just vacate the titles and have everybody else fight for it. I'm not going to drop it.
Well, I do think you could have. I mean, I understand what Bully Ray is saying, and you know, obviously he knows what he's talking about, but I do think there was somewhat of a semi-lost opportunity to put heat on somebody. You know, and you know, like I'm trying to think, you know, I mean, Ospreay just wrestled, so it probably wouldn't have been right for him, but someone coming back, maybe interrupting the ceremony. Instant heat.
Yeah.
That arena would have rioted if Sting would have lost. But I mean, playing devil's advocate and taking Bully's view, like, can you imagine if, I mean, you could name a few guys, could be Jay White, could be Okada, could be, you know, someone else coming out and costing Sting in the match. Instant heat.
Yeah.
Like, hatred of that person. Maybe Omega, the, I don't know if he's what his medical status is. You know, maybe Adam Cole, or just I mean, I do see what Bully and you are saying. Like, I think, and maybe he doesn't cost him the match, maybe Sting wins and then someone comes in and acting like they're paying tribute to him, and they beat the shit out of him. So there was maybe Wardlow. Maybe you hold Wardlow off the card.
Yeah.
Now, and Wardlow comes in at the end and beats the shit out of everyone. Hits Magnum TA, you know, like, or whoever, or Steamboat probably. He's probably most physically able of that group.
Yeah.
You know. I agree. I mean, you could have gotten everything in, but I mean, it's pretty hard to argue the ending. I mean, it was a pretty, I mean, I welled up, to be honest with you. Like, you know,
You would have probably cried more if you were there in person. I'll say that for
I
sure.
would have cried at the money I spent,
Yeah.
but I mean, that's it. You know, you're never going to please everyone. You know, if Sting lost, people would have bitched. He won. People are probably saying he should have gone out on his back. You know, I thought maybe this is where Goldberg comes in, not to do anything in the match, but like maybe show him in the crowd or something. Oh, Goldberg's here, like, you know, or something. But I gotta say, I give the pay-per-view I give it an A, not an A plus. It wasn't too many bad matches. A couple unnecessary ones, but at the worst, the B plus.
For sure. I was in the B plus territory with it just because of how well the good things were. And, you know, the only reason it wasn't an A for me was just some of the pointless matches that we talked about. But it was a good pay-per-view. I'm excited. You know, a lot of people are saying that the feeling is back in AEW. I definitely feel that there is more potential now with all these names coming in and all these things that are happening. So it is an exciting time still to be an AEW fan, even though the internet will have you believe otherwise, like they're falling apart and the arenas are empty and all this shit. And I disagree. I mean, yeah, maybe they're not selling as much, but I still think it's exciting and there's a lot of potential there. It's hard to go up
Well, I
against
do.
a hot WWE product, so.
Oh yeah, I mean the Rock thing is huge, and like that's just something you can't. But there's a lot of people who, you know, want an alternative, and I do think like you can learn a lot from Revolution. Like it was one of their better pay-per-views for sure. And outside of London, it may be their best pay-per-view because they built it. Like Revolution has been. The Sting storyline. Now, granted, that's a one-off kind of special, you know, exception. It was 2 to 3 months of, hey, this is my last match. It's a good buildup. And they should, because a lot of times, Tony Khan just concentrates on the super matches, like, and there's no storyline, and then there's no, okay, they're done, and then that's it. Osprey goes back to Japan. Omega's just in another feud with someone else. It was just a great match. I hope you guys enjoyed it. So I do think that the lesson here is if you build a good storyline, which they're known to not do, people will watch. They filled a 16,000 seat arena. There was not one empty seat in that arena. So I think that that's what they, and the Boston Garden show sold out. That's a big arena. That's 20,000. And because they've kind of slowly built this debut, everyone knows it's happening and they're still excited.
Well, hopefully things start shaping up more and more and more as time passes. I know they've been hiring. I know they brought in someone. I forget who it is, but AEW brought someone in to help TK with production and writing and all that. So it's getting there. It's getting back to some glory days to have it. But they, like I said, it's a tough hill to climb when you've got The Rock doing storylines over there at WWE, and the product is like the hottest it's been in years. So. But nothing but love and respect for AEW and all of their employees, which we are, we're fortunate enough to know. But I'm excited. We'll talk. Maybe we can do another one after Big Business, a quick short one just to see how that went, and the Mercedes Moné debut if you're down.
I mean, I will say, I believe they brought in someone specifically to write for Mercedes, so which I found interesting. Like, that's how big of a star she is. She gets her own writer.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I think, and I do think it's an exciting time. You've got some great debuts, and I mean, Ospreay, he could wrestle a broomstick and it would be interesting. He could wrestle Pepe, Chavo Guerrero's old broomstick gimmick, and I won't watch it. And then with the women, you got to figure Hayter and Britt Baker coming back. I wouldn't mind seeing a program with Baker and Mercedes. That'd be good shit talking. And Hayter's a star. I'm like, she's, do you remember her injury? Was it a ACL or what was her injury?
Ankle, leg, it's definitely the leg. It's
Okay.
either ankle or knees, but yeah, it's one of her legs.
I mean, there's potential for Mercedes to have like four solid opponents with Storm, Hart, Hayter and Baker and Donna, maybe. Like, I think they got to build her up a bit more. And Willow, so there's lot matchups out there for Mercedes, but the writing's got to be on point with her because, like, she's just too big of a star to fuck up.
Yeah, I agree. Well, all right, brother, I'm gonna let you go so you can do your thing. But let's get together after Big Business. We'll do a quick one just to see how that all worked out. Let everybody know how to follow you and watch you and all the things.
Well, first,
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's
let's give
right.
a special RIP to Mike Jones, aka Virgil Soul Man Jones.
The
It's
meat
been a
sauce
rough week.
god.
Like, Ole, I mean, Ole Anderson dying. Mike Jones. It's been a tough week for, or tough couple weeks. So
Oh, Richard
rest in
Lewis
peace to those
over
two.
comedy as well.
Yeah, Richard Lewis. Meat from Porky's, if you have ever seen the movie Porky's, which was like the OG teen romp, raunchy teen comedy. It spawned literally dozens of films. He died, and someone else died. If you follow the ice hockey movie Slapshot, which a lot of people do, Tim Dr. Hook McCracken died. So,
Oh, wow.
where I'm getting to the age of where people I grew up watching the movies are dying. And on that note, you can follow me everywhere at Earl Skakel. YouTube is where I'm concentrating the most, because I'm finally making money on YouTube. So,
Step into the Earlverse.
well, I mean, to show you how crazy this business is, I've made more money streaming in a month and a half than I did the basically the 2 years we did the Comedy Store wrestling podcast and 5 years of the Roast Battle Weekly show where I made $0. So in
Jeez.
1 month I've made, that's comedy in a nutshell.
Yeah.
So follow me to follow my bitterness.
Yes, please follow Earl. Follow me at RRBG Podcast and follow this show at Outside Interference Show on Instagram. I'm gonna keep trying to pump more episodes out. It's been slow rolling, but we're starting to get a flow going. And the new studio will be up and running pretty soon. So thank you guys for watching, and I'll see you next time. Peace.
See you.